Welcome to Inspiration and Beauty, the Griffin Choral Arts Podcast. I'm Steve Mulder, Artistic Director, and I will be your host as we talk to GCA personalities past and present, listen to clips from our choral archive, and share together our love for bringing the best choral music to the community. Inspiration and Beauty, the GCA Podcast, is made possible by the generous support of our Season 14 donors and advertisers. In these challenging times, with so much uncertainty, we truly appreciate the financial support we have experienced this season. Visit www.griffincoralarts.org to learn more about our organization and how you can get involved. Our guest today is Keith Fitzgerald. Our GCA audiences will remember Keith from his trombone playing and his monologues as the spokesperson for the Barrister Brass. The Barrister Brass have been our regular guests for GCA Christmas concerts since December 2010. While the exact composition of the ensemble varies from year to year, the core members of the group have become familiar faces, adding fanfare and festivity to the annual Christmas concert. Even though we see you regularly in December, we don't often get to know you and what you do the rest of the year, and we look forward to hearing about that today. Keith Fitzgerald, welcome to the Inspiration and Beauty Podcast.
Thank you so much. I don't know, I'm not much on beauty.
Well, we'll go heavy on inspiration then.
That's good. Right. Let's go heavy on inspiration. I got you there.
It's a bit fascinating to think about a full-time lawyer who also plays professional-level trombone. We usually think of our professional players as career musicians who may teach or work full-time in another music-related field, or maybe they have part-time work in an unrelated career to pay the bills while they gig at night and on the weekends. Tell us about your background and your education and how you ended up balancing a demanding professional career and a performing schedule.
Okay, well, I went kind of the backwards route. I started as a musician. I grew up in the DC area with the military band surrounding me. I grew up listening to the Airmen and Note play all the time, and the United States Air Force Band and the Marine Corps Band and the President's Own, all those. That was my normal thing. Like, if we were bored on the weekends, we'd go downtown and see them playing on the Capitol steps or something. So I grew up with that kind of constant band music in the background. And after a little bit of a delay after high school, as most people who want to be professional musicians probably get pushed. My parents wanted me to do, maybe see if there was something that could make money instead. After high school, you know, maybe you should try something that might make money, Keith. And so I did that for a little while, and I didn't like that. And I came back to playing trombone and went to George Mason University. And I studied there with a fabulous trombonist named Paul Schultz. He retired out of the United States Army Band. Bass trombonist, studied with Arnold Jacobs and Frank Cristofulli in Chicago when he was at Northwestern. Fabulous, fabulous player, and a great, truly inspirational, positive guy to learn trombone from. And so while I was there, I was doing the routine, you know, the musician routine is practice real hard and audition. And eventually I won two of them, really. I won the first gig that I won was the Disney Orchestra. There's an orchestra that Disney used to put together for college students, the Disney Grammy Collegiate Orchestra. And it was a studio orchestra. We'd go down, we'd spent the summer playing. But after that, I won the Air Force Band audition to be in the Air Force career field. And went to Wright-Patterson Air Force Base, where I became a trombonist in the Air Force Band of Flight. And so that was a full-time music gig, and the Air Force has a slightly different way of managing musicians than the Navy or the Army, specifically, unless you're in DC. The Air Force hires professional musicians and then doesn't train them, which is different from the standard fare Army Band or Navy Band. They'll hire a high school player and send them to the Naval School of Music in Norfolk. The Air Force doesn't do that. We hire professionals and then immediately throw them right into the fire, which is, you know, what we're expected to do. And so I toured with the Air Force Band. I lived 6 years in Japan. Wow. In the Air Force Band in the Pacific and toured most of Asia, and a fair amount of the East Coast as a trombonist, professional trombonist. And then in 2006, there's a funny thing when you're an enlisted person in the military, you go in for 4-year enlistments. Mm. And so that means that every 4 years you have to decide like, well, should I stay or should I go? Mm-hmm. And there's a funny point. Once you hit like 10 years and retirement's at 20, you stay, right? So that second hitch is an important time to figure out what you want to do.
Right.
Yeah. And at that point in time, I thought it was maybe time to for a change of pace. And I was trying to find something else out to do. And I decided to go to law school, which is, you know, people think that's pretty out of left field right there. That's about as far away from being a musician as you could be. But it turns out it's actually not. Law school and music, professional music, have a central common thing to them. And that is a significant amount of overwork when you're learning how to prepare, okay? Law school to me felt a lot like music school. It was a lot of me in a little cubicle honing my craft, whichever way it might've been. I spent a lot of, you know, in music school days, it was, you know this.
Yeah.
5, 6, 7 hours a day working on either the actual art of what you were doing, singing or playing, in my case, playing trombone or conducting or writing, whatever it is. And then the rest of the time is either listening to other stuff that inspires you or that you need to know or that you're learning. Hmm. So law school just felt like music school with a different medium to me.
Yeah.
And then as I got out of law school, the thing that really drew me to it in the first place was the concept of having an audience again.
Yeah.
As a guy who's been on stage, you know, at that point in time, I was 34 when I started law school, for my whole adult life, performing for people and entertaining, I wanted to get that feeling of being in front of people again, because I love it. Selfishly, I love the adrenaline rush of being on stage. A lot of people don't. But I do. I love that vibe backstage when you're getting ready to go on and there's that excitement, that intensity. You know you're prepared, you're ready for the show, and you go out and you do it. And that whole part is so exciting and so much fun to me. Law, especially in my field, I'm a criminal defense lawyer. My clients are entitled by the Constitution to a jury. And so it's the same thing. It's just the stakes now are significantly higher. When I remember thinking when I was going on stage to play a solo or something, how important it was that I play the solo right. Mm-hmm. But now it's more important.
Yeah.
I possibly keep people out of jail. So the risk of at the end can be a lot higher now, and that amps up the intensity, I'll tell you what.
Yeah. Well, it doesn't make you feel so bad about splitting that note, you know?
No. All of a sudden, my whole perspective is a little bit different on how trombone works, I'll tell you that. Yeah. Being on stage is much different now.
Yeah.
But the whole experience is very similar, and it's most people don't believe me when I tell them, but it really is. It's just the medium that's different. I'm using my completely hot air in a totally different way as a lawyer, right?
Yeah, that's great. Well, let's listen to a clip here. This is a rare clip of you playing without the other barristers for a performance of Mozart Requiem. As I remember this, I mentioned the Mozart concert to you when I saw you at Christmas, and you pitched yourself to play trombone, especially wanting to dig into that tuba mirum movement, probably one of the most iconic trombone solos in choral orchestral music. It was a great opportunity for you to shine as a soloist, and then you anchored the wind section of the Mozart orchestra for the other movements there. Let's listen to a bit of the Kyrie. The Kyrie movement is a fugue. It has overlapping independent melody lines weaving in and out. And I believe, as I listen to this, I think you were paired with the tenors primarily. Let's listen to this from the Mozart Requiem concert in March of 2015. let's talk about the Barrister Brass. We see you guys on stage almost every year at Christmas, and you always enhance the audience carols with great effect. Those harmonizations and the descants on Hark the Herald Angels Sing and O Come All Ye Faithful never get old. I get chills just thinking about them. I'm really going to miss them this year. You sometimes accompany the choir on extended works like the John Rutter Gloria or Daniel Pinkham's Christmas Cantata. And quite often, you will play a set of Christmas selections for brass alone, usually secular holiday repertoire and familiar carols. So take us through the process of recruiting the group, preparing for the concert, and making all of that work.
Sounds good. I'll tell a little bit about Barrister Brass, too, while I'm here.
Yeah.
Kyle Krejci and I went to law school together. And he has a master's in tuba performance from Georgia. And so we had kicked around the idea of making a brass quintet while we were in law school and thought it would be a fantastic idea. It was, you know, like, oh yeah, let's do this. It's great. Oh, let's get all sorts of lawyers to play. Well, we didn't realize there weren't that many lawyers to play in music. We thought everybody would do this thing. But then I wound up wandering around my apartment complex while I was in law school and heard somebody playing French horn out of a window. And I thought, this is ridiculous. Why is there a fantastic sounding horn player living in the apartment complex with me? And Macon at the time had an orchestra that basically just hired Atlantic people. That was it. So I knew there were no horn players in Macon that were professional quality or at that time. So I just knocked on her door. I just went up and bop, bop, bop. And turns out she's a law clerk for a federal court judge, a federal judge who went to Oberlin. And so I thought, well, shoot, we have a tuba player, a trombone player, and a horn player. If I could just find a trumpet player. And then she told me, Paul McCommon is a United States attorney at the United States Attorney's Office here. And he does criminal work. And he happens to be a superb trumpet player. And so we put the group together. And it was for a while, we just hired a single trumpet player that was a local
wild card.
Yeah, someone to cover that other trumpet book because I couldn't find another lawyer trumpet player. That was ridiculous. So that's how the group came together. And we had a lot of fun. We played like that. But then that horn player, she left. Her job was a temporary job there anyways. Mm-hmm. And so we started just using the three of us are the core members, Kyle and me and Paul. We stayed on as the core barristers in the Barrister Brass. Now, recently, the last two performances that we've done together, I've used a trombonist out of Atlanta, Mark Williamson, who is also a lawyer and also played in the Air Force band. Huh. And so we went back to four lawyers in the band, which is, you know, pretty good. But what would normally happen is the brass quintet itself, we've played a lot of this literature before, so we know a lot of the, you know, Christmas carols and that kind of thing. But generally speaking, when you're hiring professional musicians, and I mean, you know this, but I'm kind of going over it. Some people may not. In the professional musician world, you're expected to come to the rehearsal prepared. So what I would do is find the musicians that we needed for whatever ensemble size, like with the Rutter, it was three trombones, three trumpets, tuba. I can't remember if there was anything else. And get the right players in place and then send them the music, copy the music, send it out, and then expect them to come ready to play. Like you're going to drop the baton in a rehearsal and we're going to be all good to go.
Yeah.
So what we would generally do is come, you'd had a Tuesday rehearsal.
Right.
Where you guys would start at 7 and I would have the brass quintet there at 6. Mm-hmm. And we would go through our music that whatever we were going to do for the little mini brass quintet set. Mm-hmm. And then I think you would generally meet us either before we did our music or after and just run through the brass parts.
Yeah.
And we'd go through them. And then the choir would come in, you guys would warm up and we'd play all our stuff.
Yeah.
And so that was how we would get it all ready and get all together. And I just always assumed that all the players that we hired, the pro guys that we hired, would come in ready to smoke it from the first moment the baton drops.
This is one of the great things about dealing with professional musicians is, you know, that one dress rehearsal and then the performance, and they come in, and over the years I've discovered that whatever small glitches might happen on Tuesday night, by Thursday they're gone, and the guys come and they're ready to rock and roll. And
right. I did, just as a note, I did the Mozart Requiem with an orchestra in Atlanta on one rehearsal.
Yeah.
And I did the Brahms Requiem with an orchestra in Atlanta on one rehearsal.
I can't imagine.
We just came together and it was like, okay, it's time to play Brahms. And then everyone beautifully played Brahms. Like we've been playing it together for a million years.
That's great. Well, I'm going to play a clip of a piece called Gaudete. This is an arrangement of a Renaissance era carol that features the Barrister Brass and some percussion accompanying the choir. This is from December 2012. Griffin Choral Arts is a 501c3 nonprofit organization relying on the financial support of donors and advertisers to carry out our mission to bring the best choral music to the community. If you would like to become a donor, please visit our website, www.griffinchoralarts.org, and click on Support Us. Keith, you and the rest of the guys have become part of our GCA family, and I remember that for several years that Kyle Krejci's parents used to attend our Christmas concerts, traveling many miles to watch Kyle and to enjoy the Christmas music. Sometimes you and the others stick around afterwards for our Afterglow receptions, and we have some good conversations over refreshments. Are there any specific memories you have of GCA projects or concerts that you'd like to share?
Of course. My biggest memory, my most favorite memory is like the first rehearsal sitting in front of the choir. The choir is really a fantastic, wonderful, glorious organization. And normally when I'm playing with choirs, I'll be sitting down or over here, over there. And I don't generally get to sit in basically the conductor's lap.
You're right there.
And there I was right there. And all I could hear was the sound of the choir. And I've got goosebumps thinking about it right now. It was so nice to hear a fantastic, beautiful, nuanced choir sing through. I don't even remember what it was. It didn't matter. The sound was just washing over me. And I thought, this is clearly what heaven is, except for my heaven has trombones, but this is clearly what heaven is for everyone but me. So it was really fantastic. And I always looked forward every year to sitting in that chair that I knew was basically in your lap and listening to the choir do the stuff that the choir did. It was always just so nice. And being able to blend with a choir like that and being able to participate in the sound of the choir, not in a way to make my parts be solo or anything, but to bolster an already superb choir is just a pleasure as a musician to do.
Yeah, we talk about that a lot, where we bring the guests in, the guest musicians, or sometimes guest soloists, and it puts everyone up a notch. You can't help but want to impress the folks that are there. You want them to feel good about Griffin and about the choir, the choral music that we're doing in Griffin. And it feeds off of itself and becomes very special, especially Christmas. I mean, Christmas carols with brass, it's just a natural relationship that just kind of magnifies the emotion in the room, and then put the audience in there with that. And it's some of my fondest memories are standing up there with the choir and with your group in front of an audience singing Christmas music.
And to me, Christmas isn't—it's not the Christmas season yet until we've done Silent Night and Peace Piece together.
It just, right.
I'm not certain how I'm going to get in the Christmas mood this year. I guess I'm going to have to sing it in my head or something. But that was, that's one of the other memories, just sitting there with the lights out and the candles sometimes. I think we've done it with candles before.
Yeah, with the children's choir we did a couple of years with the candles, yeah. Yeah, I want to say I've heard behind me just, maybe some of the Barrister Brass singing along on that. I mean, you've heard it enough times now that you're probably singing along with the choir.
We're terrible at singing, that, right? That's why we play instruments.
You get caught up in the moment, it could happen.
I'll sing along, my poor voice will sing along.
Right.
That's always one of my favorite things. The other thing is the Afterglow receptions really demonstrate how the choir itself is a family. Mm. And I as a musician who comes in and plays a gig and leaves a lot of the time, maybe even with no rehearsal, the music's on the stand, we're going to start at the, you don't get to know a lot. You get to know these people, but kind of like just whispering at each other and, hey, let's go have a beer afterwards. And that's about it.
Yeah.
But your choir is a group that is a family, and that's a beautiful thing to come be a part of. And I've always enjoyed it, hanging out with the people, talking to everyone about their own professions and their own things and what they're doing. You have a huge, great variety of people who are fantastic musicians. Yeah. And it's always great talking to them and having that bit of camaraderie after the concert. I've always loved that.
Yeah, it's aptly named Afterglow. You've got all that adrenaline and you're hungry and you need some hydration afterwards. So it's a good chance to
is what you need.
That's and right. That's
always good after a Christmas concert.
Always good. Yep. Well, let's play one final clip before we go. The John Rutter Gloria is the only major work that GCA has performed 3 separate times in our 13 seasons. In fact, we performed it an extra time down in Warner Robins for a concert series performance down there. You joined us for that as well. It is undeniably an audience favorite as well as a singer favorite. Features an octet of 4 trumpets and 4 low brass and 2 percussionists along with the organ. It's utterly challenging with unexpected harmonies, fast moving Latin text, and meters that change frequently and are often irregular. So let's listen to a little bit of the first part of this great work. Thank you.
You know, you said it was utterly challenging, but really it's rudderly challenging. Pretty good, eh?
Very good pun. Yeah, very good. Yeah. Keith, you delight our audiences and impress us every time you share our stage. And thank you for joining us today. You have filled us with inspiration and beauty. We look forward to talking to you again very soon.
Well, thank you very much. It was a pleasure talking with you, and I look forward to making music with you again in the future. Well,
God willing, let's aim for next Christmas, huh? Next December.
Sounds good for me. I'm good.
All right.
We express appreciation once again to our donors and advertisers. We could not carry out our mission without your financial support. Season 14 has been full of challenges, but we are overwhelmed with the financial support you have shown us in 2020. As we turn the corner into 2021, we are determined to keep singing because it is important now more than ever. To learn more about our organization, go to our website, www.griffincoralarts.org.
Thank you for listening to Inspiration and Beauty, the Griffin Choral Arts podcast. If you enjoyed this episode, please recommend us to your friends. Contact us if you would like to be a podcast sponsor. Join us next time as we talk to another GCA personality and listen to more recordings from the archive. Griffin Choral Arts, using inspiration and beauty to create community.